Excuse me, that's my chair. My stool. I just don't really feel comfortable saying that's my stool. In this context, I mean, in a medical context. Anyway, that's my place, buddy. Okay? Yes, it does have my name on it. Take a look underneath, right there under the rim. That's right. Zoink! Sorry. Well, now he'll have to find another place to go sit. Sorry, there's plenty of stools at the counter. Pick up a stool. Find a stool. Choose a stool that meets your needs. You leave for a month here, and people just forget you, I guess. Well, this is my accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern for my counter, and I'm James Lilings, and this is the diner. The diner on an old Highway 23, about 18 and a half minutes from wherever you happen to be at this moment. And I thank you for dropping by. I apologize if you've been dropping by and I haven't been here. I've been busy. I've been gone. Oops, there's the old crack in the throat from the cold. I'm going to go all slim pickings on you today. My voice was ravaged, as was my body, by the rigors of travel. I like travel. I like traveling a great deal. It broadens one. What I like, however, is I like to go to a different place and have everything exactly the way I like it, like I have it back home. And so I fly halfway around the country and find myself in a hotel room with my laptop. And it's great because it's different. The lamp is over there, and I'm in the same room as a bed, and there's all kinds of Neutrogena products that I can hoard. That was the hotel that I stayed at. Had the finest in Neutrogena products, including a shower cap. There's a little box with a shower cap and a little box with the sewing kit. Now, I have never found myself needing to sew anything, anywhere, let alone in a hotel room. It's one of those skills that I lack. And I tend to think that people who do know how to sew can probably improvise somehow or have brought a sewing kit with them. It just seems a lot to ask at this day and age that hotels provide us with a needle and thread. I mean, it's a little archaic, don't you think? It's like providing us with wick trimmers or something like that, which sounds vaguely salacious now that I think about it. Anyway, I mean, if you call the front desk and ask them to send up a wick trimmer, they'd probably call an escort service. There was a sewing kit, a shower cap, which again I've never used, because for me, part of the point of getting into the shower is to actually moisten the hair. And soap. Well, it's not soap anymore, is it? It's body wash, which, again, is sort of 70s, massagey, oily kind of body wash. Is it flavored body wash? Coconut-flavored I don't even want to think about it. Boy, this is getting naughtier the more I think about it, isn't it? So in addition to the wick trimmer and the body wash, there was shampoo and conditioner, of course, and then a bar of hard-milled French soap. I have no idea what that means. The term French soap itself is a bit of an oxymoron, and I know that's unfair. They do bathe often, not as much as we obsessively clean Americans do with our daily insistence on scraping the dead skin cells off our bodies. But French soap just doesn't have the cachet for me that it might. Unless, of course, it's cachet brand French soap. But hard milled, I don't know what that means either. I mean, I'm only going to be in this room for a little while. If the bar actually dissolves halfway through my stay, there's a fighting chance I can get another one. I can call down to the desk and say, cancel that wick trimmer. I'd like some hard-milled soap. And they'll send some up promptly. But then again, I have a deep-seated attachment to hotel notions, if you want. Ever since I was a kid, I always stole them. Well, that's the word. Kept them as souvenirs is the kind term, but yeah, I stole them. I took everything as a kid. I cleaned the place out. Now, towels, I knew that there was a bright dividing line that separated towels from stationery. There's no possible way that you could justify taking a towel. Oh, they expect you to take it. Yeah, sure they do. And the pillow and the phone while you're at it. Once I was in a motel somewhere in Memphis, Tennessee, it was a Holiday Inn that one of the original Holiday Inns, and it had lost its license. And, I mean, you really have to work hard to be one of the first historic Holiday Inns and get kicked out of the chain. It's like being kicked out of the 12 Apostles stuff for not paying your dues. I mean, And it had wood burning tool engraved on the side of it, on the top and on all of the sides, property of the with the hotel and the phone number and the rest of it. And it was a crappy television that could only pull in 1.5 stations, and Walter Cronkite looked horrible, and it would wobble on its base. And there's no conceivable reason that a person would steal this television set at all, but yet they were worried about it. So, no, you don't steal the TV, you don't take the phone, you don't take the pillows, you don't take the towels. It's not done. However, everything else is fair game, or at least it was to my small imagination as a child. I took the stationery, which they've got lots of. I took the room service menu, back in the days when it was a simple folded sheet. I took the card that gave you the number of a pastor, because in those days, in the old days at least, 1968, whatever, at the Howard Johnson in Bloomington, Minnesota, they put a little card with the name of a pastor in case you needed to talk to somebody, which is very nice. But it was sort of one-size-fits-all's domination. And I guess that worked. I guess the man could improvise if need be, but I took that. I took the shoeshine cloths, which mystified me because they were made of a fabric of a kind of paper I'd never seen before. I took the dry cleaning bags. I took the dry cleaning tickets that you wrote out, because the whole motel experience was so fascinating to me. It was so incredibly wonderful that I wanted to save as many relics as I could. I mean, the first hotel that we went to was a Hojo, but the second, Holiday Inn, somewhere down south on a trip, there was a radio in the wall. In the wall. Built right into the wall. And, I mean, you know you're looking at the future when you see actual knobs you can click on the wall and conjure music out of the ether. It's wonderful. So, on this trip, I did not steal everything from the room, partially because the ashtrays did not have a distinguishing mark on them. But I did, I confess, hoard some of the fine Neutrogena products, mainly because they were good, and because for some reason I always think that we're going to have 400 people over to the house and everyone will want to wash their hair at the same time, and so we're going to need small individual servings of all these things. Really, that's what makes them special. It's because they're individually served. If it was a bottle, a big bottle of Neutrogena shampoo that was left in there, you wouldn't touch it. You'd leave it alone. But it's so cute and tiny, and you just want to take it home and love it and pet it and call it George and all the rest of it. So I saved all of those things. I did take them. So that made that hotel experience quite different from normal life. Hoarding of small plastic bottles of Neutrogena fluids. What else was different about it? Well, like all hotels, it had a little sign that you could hang on the door. And the sign would tell the staff that you were sleeping and did not wish to be disturbed, or as the French version puts it, deranged. I always loved that translation. Ce n'est pas dérangé. Do not derange me. It makes more sense than don't disturb, because frankly, when you put that thing out there and they still knock at 8 o'clock in the morning, housekeeping! You are wondering why the devil you put it out there in the first place. Of course, they're thinking, and I can perfectly understand why, that you just breezed out at 6:30 in the morning like everybody else and you forgot to take it off, so it's necessary to housekeeping. But, you know, what do? You wake up, you say the only word that comes to mind, occupied, and occupied really doesn't resonate, doesn't click with them, so eventually you have to say, I'm here. You would think that just simply making animal sounds would be sufficient, that any indication of human occupation would be sufficient to turn them away, but it isn't. I didn't take that card this time. I didn't take the Do Not Disturb card as I did as a child, because it, again, didn't have any particular interesting graphics or branding on it. So that was different. I was down the hall a bit from the ice machine, which was good, because if you're next to partying people or individual solitary chronic alcoholics, they will make several peregrinations down the hall to pick up a fresh batch of ice with that wonderful sound that we all love to hear at 2 in the morning. And the problem with hotel ice, I learned, is it is specially designed to melt as quickly as possible. It's like some bar ice. I don't know how they do it. It's like whipped ice. It's gone right away. So there was the ice. The ice was insufficient. But in general, staying in hotels was grand. I love hotels. And I tire them eventually. But, you know, when you leave, you look around, you say goodbye, you tip your hat, you slip a bill into the ashtray for the waitress. The waitress, listen to me, the housekeeping. Can we call them housekeeping? Is it now sheet folding engineers or something like that? It seems such an archaic term. And then you, with a little regret, leave because you'll never be back. You'll never come back to this room again. And this was a space that you owned, that you occupied, that was yours. So I went from Denver to home and caught a cold in the process, which is why my voice previously cracked in a Slim Pickens style. The cold was achieved the old-fashioned way by a combination of exhaustion and contact with public services and the plane. And, you know, you walk around and you know that you're tired and you're run down and that everybody around you has a cold, and what do you tell yourself? Don't touch your face. That's all you have to do. Just don't touch your face. You know, you have a cold germ on your finger. Apparently, there's some magic Gardol shield, some Teflon epidermis that keeps the germs from getting inside your skin. But if you touch your eyes, if they're itchy, or your nose, because it's itchy, or, you know, palpate a cavity in the back of your mouth, the germ goes right into your system, and there you go. You're off. Another 14 days of wheezing and hacking. So there I was. Don't touch your face. But somehow it's unavoidable in a plane because planes, as of yet, have not solved the problem of the fact that everybody is breathing the same air. It is irritating in a way because everybody who takes a flight gets a cold at some point. When there's a perfectly good personal supply of oxygen right above you, that thing ought to drop down the minute you get into the plane. It ought to come down and you can fit it around your face, fitting it around your face before you fit it around your child's face, too, of course, as per the instructions. And I always love that. It's the one time in which parents are encouraged to be completely selfish. Look, we know your instinct is to help your kid first, but please, help yourself. And if that thing popped down and you put it around, nobody would get a cold. And if there was a problem with the airplane, then it would go up into the airplane and everybody would know that you should start worrying now. And frankly, you know, I would prefer to have the oxygen mask go into the ceiling, which just seems less terrifying than all of a sudden, kajang, all of them come down. But deprived of personal oxygen supply in the plane, I apparently inhaled some rhinovirus from somebody, perhaps the nice inert people from Texas sitting next to me who said not a word to each other on the flight, read books, old married couple, and then when it landed, the man said, "That was the smoothest flight I've ever had." And the wife nodded. And they, I think, said 17 words to each other later in the day, but I wasn't around to take note. So maybe from them, maybe from the stew, who knows? Maybe they're all just, you know, typhoid Marys walking around and everything they hand you has got a cold germ on it. But once you have a cold germ, once you have a cold, what can you then do? Well, you can touch your face all you like. You can stick your finger in your nose. You can rub your palms against your eyeballs. Ah, it's just you can comb your, you know, you can move your tongue around in interesting shapes. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Touch your face. Go ahead, because you've got a cold, for that matter. And you know, you can actually leave a public laboratory after. Did I say public laboratory? The public laboratory. It'd be great if there were public laboratories, weren't there? Places where you could go and put on a white coat and look at beakers and pour smoking fluids into flasks. If you leave a public lavatory, you wash your hands, and then you don't have that moment of paranoia before you touch the knob to leave. That's always seemed the flaw in the whole public lavatory hand-washing situation. You've just cleaned your hands as well as you can, but who knows what the previous person did? So you end up opening it with your elbow or something like that. Not when you've got a cold. No. Matter of fact, you practically spit in your hands before you open that knob. Why? Because you're sick. That's all that matters. So I came back ill and didn't make it to the diner for an awful long time. But I seem to have recovered now. Voice is no longer residing specifically and exclusively in my nose. I have all my energy. I've got vim and or vigor. Got slight bruising in the lumbar region, but that has to do with a large hamster ball I fell out of the other day. The only problem with a sore back like this is it's hard to keep yourself propped up on a stool. This is one of those days when I actually wish the diner had a back to the chairs, but they don't. There's a reason for that, incidentally. I think back in the 30s during Prohibition, the owners were concerned that people were sneaking in their own hooch. And they were, probably. Brown paper bags, little, you know, little gin in the Jubal. And when people would get appropriately hammered on the stuff, they would lean back on their stool and, of course, fall and dash their brains against the tiled floor, which, after a while, proved to be a rather interesting visual and auditory disincentive to getting too drunk at a diner that, after all, serves no booze. I did go to a Denver diner. This is interesting. I think Sam's Number 3 is the name of the place. Calamitous, just loud as hell. Plates the size of hubcaps heaped with immense amounts of hash browns and great sausage that made you sweat just looking at it. Wonderful place, and the diner stools there were as they are here. The ridges on the side of the counter as are they are were as they are here. Diagram that sentence. With the little ridges on them and the chrome and the, everything was just absolutely perfect, but a bit too tumble down. A bit too much. This place is showing its age, but it's perfect. Oh, one more thing I love about hotel life. In-room coffee. Those are some of the sweetest syllables ever put together. They're almost up there with moist towelette. In-room coffee. You always get, of course, two bags. You get regular and you get decaf. And the brand, you've never heard of it before. In this case, in Denver, it was City Roast with a picture of a skyline. So I could have a true urban coffee experience. And I always went through about three bags a day, and I'd have to go to the front desk and ask for more, which they happily gave. But I noticed that the housekeeping did not replenish my supply with caffeinated products. They just kept giving me more decaf. And the decaf ones just piled up. And they would come the next day and see two packets of decaf and assume, well, he obviously doesn't want any more coffee, even though I had clearly used the machine and it was stained to prove it. So they would just ignore, and then I would ask for more coffee the next day, and I would come back, and there would be four packets of decaf. And it threatened to turn into Shelley Berman's long monologue about excessive soap. I would never, mind you, ever complain about too much Neutrogena, but too much decaf, it was just cluttering up the place. There's also a microwave, and I felt bad that I couldn't use it, that I didn't have popcorn or a burrito or something like that. And then one night, I was working. I wanted some coffee, but I didn't want to make a whole pot of this stuff. And there were dregs, and I could microwave them in a hotel room, which just seemed the epitome of comfort and convenience. Ah, to wake in a hotel and have the coffee right there. Not have to wait for that $9 pot to be dragged up by room service. Not have to clean yourself up and look presentable so you can stumble down to the buffet and get some dried out leathery French toast and some sausages that are barely warm and have been sitting there in a steamer pot since 1952. No, all you want in the morning is coffee. Good coffee. And there it is. That's a wonderful thing, I tell you. Wonderful thing. Anyway, let's check the jukebox, see what's going on here. I have the suspicion, perhaps, that the person who comes and stocks the jukebox in the middle of the night may have put on a lot of political songs, thinking that I'm tired of the whole presidential race thing. Ha! I'm not. Bring it on. Bring it on! Let's go straight to A1.
I'm up every morning, my eyes swelled up, trying to sober up with my coffee cup.
Yeah!
Coffee, baby. Coffee, baby. Well, if I don't get my coffee, well, I'm surely gonna blow my top.
Yes! Speak it!
Well, I saw a light a-coming, I knew it was a cop. I didn't slow down until I reached that coffee shop. Coffee, baby. Coffee, baby.
Fight the power.
Now if I don't get my coffee, well, I'm surely gonna blow my top.
And what would that sound like? Why, it'd sound like this. Percolating style. Drip. French press. Americano. Venti. Latte. No, to hell with that venti latte stuff. I want coffee, baby.
Well, now I'm widely known for driving fast cars, drinking black coffee, and smoking big cigars. Oh. Coffee, baby.
Testify.
Coffee, baby. Now, if I don't get my coffee, well, I'm surely gonna blow my top. Well, 100 flat are showing, and I cracked up. I totaled my car, Lord, but I saved my coffee cup. Coffee, baby.
Man has priorities.
Coffee, baby.
Lucky mug is a
now
special
if I
thing.
Don't get my coffee, well, I'm surely gonna blow my top.
You gonna blow it again? Blow it, baby. Playing that with his nose?
Me and my baby starting to pet. Said, wait a minute, buddy, ain't had my coffee yet.
It'll be great for the breath.
Coffee, baby. Coffee, baby. Now if I don't get my coffee, well, I'm surely gonna blow my top. Well, my little woman said she just can't understand. If I don't get my coffee, I'm just half a man. Coffee, baby. Coffee, baby. Now if I don't get my coffee, well, I'm surely gonna blow my top.
Yeah, coffee, baby. Excellent. Speaking of which, I seem to have had a lot, so I'm going to take a break here for a moment, investigate the state of the Diner Laboratories. We'll be right back after a word from some of our sponsors.
Chock full of nuts is that heavenly coffee, heavenly coffee, heavenly coffee. Chock full of nuts is that heavenly coffee. Better coffee a millionaire's money can't buy.
Well, one cup of coffee and a cigarette. I'm waiting on the one I want to love and pet. It seems like a year since I've seen her face. Her sweet lips I can't wait to test. I'm waiting on my baby and she ain't here yet. One cup of coffee and a cigarette.
You know, nobody's done a study exactly on the effect of the mug on coffee. I'm serious. Coffee is either good or bad, depending on how it's made, of course, but there's an ineffable something that is transmitted to the coffee drinking experience by what you're drinking it in, which is why everybody hates to drink it out of paper cups. For some reason, there is nothing as volcanically hot as coffee in a paper cup that is sipped through that tiny little sharp plastic aperture that you get from a drive-through window, whereas coffee in a good, heavy ceramic mug, not too thick, mind you, but not too thin, has a quality that's just perfect. I'm sure there's physics involved somewhere, but I can't explain it any more than I have. Although you know when you're having a bad cup experience. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, I went to New York for the first time, and I had coffee at Chock Full of Nuts in Herald Square, and I was ready to have the ultimate New York coffee experience. This would be Joe. This would be Jake. This would be Jamoke. This would be the go juice that beat Hitler, by God. Coffee in New York City. So I went to Chock Full of Nuts and sat down at the counter and ordered one up. And, well, I didn't know. Unschooled in the ways of New York coffee as I was unaware that coffee automatically came with milk in it. Maybe it's changed. Maybe these days the interminable number of permutations of coffee that have been visited upon the country by the Starbucks Corporation have trained the New Yorkers off their milk and coffee automatically paradigm, but at the time, it came with milk. What's more, it was delivered by a waitress who really could not have cared less about whether I was having an authentic New York coffee experience, and either she was palsied or she had uneven heels. For whatever reason, by the time she got the coffee over to me and clanked it down on my on the counter in front of me, most of it was in the saucer. And again, I'm sure that's a genuine New York coffee-drinking experience to slurp it out of the saucer. I've seen that in movies. I didn't know it was because they just threw it at you. But at the time, I'm looking at my coffee with milk, and I'm looking at the coffee in the saucer, and I'm looking at a cup so wide that all of the hot stuff is just evaporating into the atmosphere, and I'm thinking, well, this is not what I thought it would be. But I am in New York in Herald Square, chock full of nuts, so this must be authentic. And it brought me back to the coffee of my youth, to the coffee of the Lutheran basements in Fargo, North Dakota. Coffee so weak you could see through, you could read fine agate print through it. But nevertheless, that was coffee to them, and the stuff with the milk and the cold and the wide mouth cups was coffee to New Yorkers. And both were wrong, frankly, and I think I can state that without fear of contradiction. Anyway, as I stated, I was in Denver for the convention and in St. Paul for the convention, and there was coffee everywhere. The coffee in the Star Tribune newsroom, it was great. The coffee at Johnny Rockets in Denver, it was great. The coffee in my room was great. Everywhere, good coffee. If ever there was a fortnight that needed coffee, it was that one, and coffee delivered. Coffee came through. But there's something else about the convention, and I know we usually don't, we haven't gotten political here at the diner since we had the great big argument over FDR's third term, but I have to say it. We all met at the convention, a female politician who, frankly, came out of nowhere. Nobody was expecting her, and let's put it that way, people had known about her before, but she really impressed an awful lot of people. And I know there's a lot of, people are making fun of her appearance. You know, she dresses odd. Her hairstyle is weird. Her head's too big. I hear a lot about that. Oh, her head's so big. Well, that frankly does a disservice to somebody who I think is a remarkable candidate with some fascinating and necessary positions. Like I say, we usually don't take a stand, but I was so impressed with this woman that, well, I was delighted to find out that not only was there a song about her candidacy, but she appears to be singing it, which is quite extraordinary and unusual in these days, isn't it? I mean, we often think of candidates as being celebrities, but for them to actually vocalize their own platform is quite extraordinary. And I'm delighted to find out that the fellow who stalks the jukebox in the middle of the night must have read my mind, because here it is at B2.
We want better days. We want better days. We want better days.
Some of you have money, while some are poor, you know. If you send me to Washington, I'll just divide the dough.
When I'm the president, I'll handle all the money when I'm the president.
We want Betty, we want Betty.
Now if you have a sister and want a brother too, tell Pa and Ma to vote for me, I'll see what I can do.
We want Betty, we want Betty, we want Betty, we want Betty.
Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? I'm Mr. Nobody. Who will make your taxes light? Mr. Nobody. Who'll protect the voters right? Mr. Nobody. Who fills up your flour keg? Who cares if you have to beg? Who cares if you break a leg? Mr. Nobody.
Boo, boo. Boo, boo.
When you're hungry, who feeds you? Mr. Nobody. Who cares what becomes of you? Mr. Nobody. Should you wake some early dawn, find a new milkman is on. Who cares if your wife is gone? Mr. Nobody.
Boo, boo. Boo.
When I'm the president,
I won't talk on the radio when I'm the president. Oh, when I'm the president.
Uh-huh, when I'm the president, I'll show you how I'll run the house when I'm the president. What this country is in need of is a lot of hidey-ho, boop-a-doops and chocolate ice cream.
We say yes and we say no.
We reject it.
You're an elephant.
You're an ass.
Yeah.
You have heard all my suggestions, and with me you all agree. Now we'll have a perfect country. These improvements you will see.
And of course it goes without saying, Coco the Clown for VP. Well, that'll do it for this week, folks. Thank you very much for dropping by the diner. I'm James Lilacs, and this has been the diner for Friday, September 12th, 2008. We'll see you down the road.